Welcome into Stone Cold Strohs. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Palullo, who you can follow on X at Palullo, and Josh Jordan. He's at JoshJordan975. And in between our episodes here, you can read their blogs covering Houston Pro Sports over on sportsmap.com. On today's episode, no Paredes, no problem as the Astros continue to set the pace in the division. We'll dig into how Houston has continued their winning ways with such a thin roster. And we teased it in our last episode, but we'll try to get into the heads of the Astros front office to predict what we may see in the way of trade ahead of the deadline. Charlie, Josh, welcome in. In a weekend headlined by several sweeps across the AL, Houston joins in the action in dramatic fashion to continue their winning ways. Unfortunately, along the way, lose another player to the IL, this time rookie Jacob Melton headed to the 10-day with a sprained ankle. But in spite of this continued wave of injuries, Houston finds themselves in a season-high 11 games over 500. They continue to keep fellow series sweepers Seattle and Texas at arm's length. It hasn't been easy, but Houston keeps finding ways to win, seemingly a new hero each night. However, there are some regular faces that keep putting themselves in the middle of the critical moments. Charlie, as we lead off with you, what are your takeaways from this recent run that has allowed Houston to do so much with, on paper, so little?
Well, coming off the sweep of Minnesota, it's 15 out of 20. The Astros were 26 and 25 when we were gathered 3.5 weeks ago. 15 and 5 since. Softish schedule, but take advantage of it, right? If you're in a horse race and there are a bunch of donkeys in there, go to the whip, pull away. And winning 75% of your games over a three-week period, job well done, shorthanded and all that. 1-2, Fromber, Hunter, Valdez, Brown. That is the base of what has the Astros starting the week 4.5 games in front. But they're winning on the margins. They are 9 games ahead of where they were at this point last year, and there's an easy breadcrumb trail of numbers to follow. If you want to relive the nightmare of the first couple of months of 2024, the Astros could not win a close game to save their lives. At the same point in the schedule they reached on Sunday, 71 down, 91 to go. The Astros are 13-7 in one-run games. Last season, same point, they were 5-14 in one-run games. In two-run games, the Astros are 10-8. Last year at this point, they were 4-8. Extra innings, it feels like the last couple of seasons. If it goes beyond 9, the Astros probably aren't going to win. This point last season, 3-6 in extras. This season, undefeated, 4-0 after putting it together on Sunday. Back-to-back one-run wins over the Twins. Getting to the closer in each of those games, Yoan Duran, who's a sub-150 ERA guy, and they were able to eke it out. So it's an overrated saying that the good teams win the close games. The close games introduce more randomness to things, right? The good teams are more likely to win in blowouts because they have superior talent to beat down grossly inferior opponents. And year to year, the pendulum can just swing one way or the other. Last year, the first half of the season, the Astros were for hunger in close games, picked it up. Back end of the bullpen is a key component of that. Hader and Abreu at the 71 game mark, identical number of innings pitched, 31, identical earned run averages of 1.45. Sousa, sub-2. Dubin, sub-2. Take out the one outing where Brian King got lit up, he'd be sub-2. Instead, he's in the high twos. So they're winning those close call games at a vastly better ratio than they were the first half of last season and overall last season.
It's balance, right? The pitching's been excellent. The hitting's been good enough. They're 14th in OPS in baseball, so middle of the pack, but it doesn't matter when you're pitching that well. They're 5th in ERA and they're 1st in batting average against. So the pitching's been awesome over the last week. It's kind of nice too, because Pena's kept it up over the last week, hitting over 400, but Altuve hitting over 400 over the last week. Cam Smith hitting over 300. So even Christian Walker almost hitting 300. So sometimes you have it where the guys you count on kind of stumble and then the other guys do well, and then vice versa, where it's going back and forth. But right now, everybody's kind of kicking it into high gear for the Astros now. You still have Pena leading the charge, but you know Altuve's heating back up again, and Yiner's hitting almost 300 over the past week. So really great job with these guys just keeping it consistent and guys go down and other guys step up. It's a shame with Jacob Melton. I was really starting to like what I was seeing with him, and it made you wonder if the Astros did need to make a move for a left-handed bat. Maybe he was going to provide that, but unfortunately for him, looks like he's going to miss about a month. We'll see how they adjust there, but they should be getting healthier. Maybe Yordan's on his way back, and then imagine what the offense can do when you get him back.
Well, it's at least another week for Yordan. He's not going on this road trip. And when we say at least another week, it's the Astros. Who the hell knows? but while some guys have come on and Pena's largely maintained, look, they won the game Saturday and Sunday over Minnesota, in which the Astros combined were 8-for-60. They were 4-for-30 on Saturday. They were 4-for-30 on Sunday. That's a 133 batting average, 8-for-60. But won both games 3-2 because the pitching was stellar and they just came up with a timely hit. The other huge bugaboo of early last season. Can they ever come up with a clutch runners in scoring position with two out hit? Cam Smith with the game winner on Saturday. He's a sub 700 OPS guy. So in the universe of big league players, Cam Smith's not a good offensive player. He's having a very promising rookie season, though he's coming up on 2 months since his last home run. And on Sunday, Dubon, who we know is not a good offensive player, but hits a ball about as hard as he's going to be able to hit one to just the right nook and cranny in left center field where Castro gets spooked by the wall. And that's a game winner for Dubon. So pulling out just enough to win. The Astros have made a habit of that and also establishing that they're better than the mediocre field, basically, that is the American League. That's why this week, 4 at Sacramento, then 3 at the Angels, who drifted back to earth over the weekend after their mini surge. The next homestand is going to be a lot of fun because the National League is where the preponderance of very good teams are. And 2 of them will be at Daikin Park next week, the Phillies and then the Cubs.
Charlie, you mentioned the randomness of close games, but what's not been random is who has been right in the middle and who was right in the middle of both walk-off wins in the Twins series. Jake Meyers, I'm not sure you can quantify how valuable Meyers has been to this team. And then Jeremy Pena, a walk and a stolen base in the ninth inning of the finale. Cam Smith getting the first ever walk-off, not just in the bigs, but his career. We talk about, you know, the new hero every night. You touched on Dubon's emotional walk-off on his first Father's Day as a father. So what a moment. Charlie, a few seasons ago, this a team like the White Sox were thought to be this ascendant team with a core of good young players, only for them to quickly implode into a historically bad team. The Rangers won a World Series 2 seasons ago, only to miss the playoffs the following season and have struggled for most of this year, battling like heck just to get back to 500. The Orioles, who some called the next Astros franchise, were very good across a few seasons, only to become a cellar dweller this year. We use abstract words like culture when we talk about sustained success from teams. But is the resiliency on display from Houston right now tangible evidence of a winning culture?
Hard to dispute. Again, very difficult to quantify specifically what culture is. I will start with top-tier talent. You know, intangibles only matter if they're in support of tangibles. And we're getting nearer to the all-star team selections. 32 players make it in each league. So 15 teams in the American League, 32 players. That's just over 2 players on average if all teams were created equal. Obviously, they are not. But the Astros have an argument to have 1/3 of the American League pitching staff. Right? If they take 12 pitchers, Hunter Brown's near a lock. Framber Valdez is charging hard. Josh Hader's near a lock. And Brian Abreu has the same stats as Hader. And then on the offensive side, you have Isak Paredes, who, depending on how much time he misses, is a candidate to be a third baseman on the All-Star team. So that'd be 5 representatives from the Astros right there. No, Jake Meyers does not belong on the All-Star team, but most improved player on the Astros roster, he'd been a very good major league outfielder to this point in the season. And given what else they've gotten in the outfield production, I'm not going to say it's been a lifesaver, but it's sure been a life booster.
All we hear about is how terrible the Astros farm system is. And then Colton Gordon comes in, and then you've seen what Gusto's done this year. Brandon Walter. It's unbelievable what they do with these guys. They pull up from Sugarland. They just don't miss a beat. It's really incredible that every year we seem to undersell the Astros farm system, and these guys are coming up and helping you win ball games. And that great bullpen's not so great if you don't have a starting pitcher getting you to the 5th, 6th, 7th inning with the chance to win the ball game. So tip of the cap to those guys. It's been really unbelievable. And even Jacob Melton, Shelton, I mentioned earlier, before he got hurt, he was starting to look like maybe he can give you something. So who knows? Maybe there's some other things up Dana Brown's sleeve that we might see as this season goes along.
On the pitching side, they've really spun gold out of straw time and time again. Position players, so we'll see on Melton. Maybe they reach a point where you just say enough, Brendan Rodgers, and give Bryce Matthews a try, whose OPS is pushing 900 now at AAA, still striking out way too much, and they're going to want him to make better contact probably before summoning him. But if they're comfortable with enough of him as a defensive option at second base, because Rodgers gives you nothing. Right? He's solid defensively, but he's not better than Dubon. So if you're thinking Matthews can upgrade you on the hitting side of that position, maybe he doesn't wait to be one of their couple of September call-ups.
Yeah, and Josh, that's what spawned the idea. This much maligned farm system that we've talked and heard about. To Charlie's point, it is mostly around the pitching that they continue to produce. But that combined with the significant roster turnover that we've seen over the past several seasons, and yet they just keep on winning. And a piece of that that we can't overlook is the manager. And it's interesting to see how divisive or polarizing Joe Espada is for some Astros fans. And certainly we've had our fair share of mild criticisms for some of his moves. But I think it's hard to look at this lineup that he's being forced to run out there and expect the results they're getting. On the other hand, Houston has this reputation around baseball of being inevitable. And people will point to the weak division as a way of downplaying Houston's success. That in mind, what kind of case do you guys think Joe Espada has 71 games into the season for manager of the year in AL?
In terms of the polarizing, it just means he's a big league manager, right? Dusty Baker. We're going to go back to Phil Garner, Jimmy Williams, Larry Durker. Anyone who manages is going to have his advocates and his criticizers. When you look at the American League, who else would be the candidates? The Yankees won the pennant. Yeah, they lost Gerrit Cole and Juan Soto, but Soto they retooled and had money to work with, but they won the pennant and were thought to be the best team in the American League coming into this season. I think A.J. Hinch is probably the chief competition at this point, right? The Tigers eked into the playoffs, but I don't think anyone projected them to be 102, 103 win team, which they are on pace for as we cross the midway point in June. And yes, the American League West is weak, right? It's the only division where there's only one team with a winning record. But it is the Astros. No one else has taken advantage of it. So other than Hinch, maybe Kevin Cash with the Rays, but they were 500-ish last year, and it's not like they're on pace to win 95 games this year. So sure, a spot is in the hunt.
Yeah, he's done a lot of this with one of his hands tied behind his back with no Yordan for most of the season, and now you got Paredes going down, and almost half your starting rotation is just disappears out of nowhere. So he's done a great job. That my only deal with the spot is I'm just like, please don't tell me that it's going to be a regular occurrence where Brendan Rodgers and Dubon are going to be starting in the same lineup while Paredes is down. That's the first thing he went to in the first game without Paredes, which is fine. Every now and then that's okay. When you want to play your best defense, when your ground ball pitchers are out there, cool, I get it. But I don't think that can be a regular thing. And it's really, Dubon doesn't bother me that much. It's just Brendan Rodgers has just looked so bad this year. I don't think you can regularly count on him. I'd rather see Altuve at second base or whatever else that they want to go with there. But yeah, I think also that the bullpen management, Espada has done a good job with that. So yeah, I don't see why he shouldn't be in serious consideration.
I mean, they're just short in terms of Espada's lineups, right? You pull a string and hope it doesn't snap on you. I mean, Sunday's lineup had Cooper Hummel and Luis Guillorme in there. So if there's more Altuve at second base, well, someone has to be the third outfielder with Cam and Jake. They just don't have anyone worthy with Melton out until Yordan gets back, right? If Altuve's in there, Dubon at second base. Caratini really hadn't hit a whole lot lately, but bat on ball with the game-tying sacrifice fly on Sunday. I mean, he was the cleanup hitter on Sunday. He's a sub-700 OPS guy. But you look at the Twins over the weekend, Cleveland the series last weekend, going to play the A's and then the Angels. How many teams have lineups that you're going, ooh, that's imposing? So I think the baseline in criticism of the Astros is what we saw over the preponderance of the last 8 years. This lineup doesn't hold a candle to anything before last year. And when you had Tucker and Yordan in there, that was a better lineup than this one once Bregman woke up. So compared to the peak Astros team of this era, of course it's inferior. But relative to the pond in which they swim, the American League, they're middle class, the pitching is very upper class, and that nets out as well above average as a ball club.
I think he should be in consideration, but where I think I'm hesitant to think he's going to get consideration is for the reasons I laid out, which is there just seems to be this expectation that Houston's going to be there. And I think we as content creators and people who are following the team granularly from a game-to-game basis, we know the national writers just don't follow it like that. They look at this big picture standpoint. There's not a thought of the amount of roster turnover that's happened. They just go, well, Houston made the playoffs last year. They should be in it this year. So I think that's where there may be some discounting of the incredible job that Joe Espada is doing right now. Just a quick message. If you're interested in advertising your service or product on this show, you can contact our friends at the sales team at houston.sportsmap.com/advertise. The link is also in our description. I'm starting to feel like we are the EJ's Neato stat of the night. And I'll leave it at that because if you know, you know. So we teased this last episode. Chandler Rome had written a column a few days ago for The Athletic about Houston's trade needs. We've highlighted on this show too, but he highlighted how owner Jim Crane does have a history of being aggressive at the deadline when he feels or senses that the team is a legit contender, but then points to the recent work that Houston has done to get under the CBT and the significant cost that they'd face should they be a repeat taxpayer. The three of us obviously don't know Crane personally or know what sort of influence Dana Brown has internally. So we'll have to take our best guess at this. But what do you think the threshold is that this team needs to hit for Crane to give Dana Brown the green light to aggressively go make a trade or trades to bring in a bat and or an arm with the purpose of making a deep run?
I think at this point, it's not a thought to go big or go home. You know, fortune favors the bold. They start the A's series on a 93-win pace. Now, the Astros going to have another dip or two or three during? Of course they are. They're going to lose four in a row at some point or six out of eight. It happens. But maybe unless they feel they have to parry the thrust of a Seattle. If it had been the Mariners, whoa, they went out and traded for Rafael Devers. There's that big bat Seattle needs. Anyone thinking, well, the Astros, they could use a left-handed hitter. Why did they trade for Rafael Devers? How about 8 years and $254 million left on his deal after this season? But Seattle didn't, right? If the Texas Rangers make a bold move or two, maybe you're thinking, all right, you moved your pawn to that spot. Now it's time for us to make our move. But if you're Jim Crane and you're thinking we want to reset on the tax and save the additional money, what's the urgency to make a move? I think the argument is if you think you can overtake the Yankees for the second best record in the American League and avoid the two out of three, where the Astros were quickly sent home in the postseason last season. But is that enough to say, okay, we're going to pay a tax, a more punitive tax, and be set up for a three-time repeater tax if they're in the same payroll territory next season?
It almost makes me wonder, like, would Jim Crane be like, why do we need to make a move? We're doing so great as we are. Why do we want to deal away from our depleted farm system? And why would we do that? And why pay all that extra money? And part of me is telling me that. And the other thing is health, right? Is Arrighetti going to come back at the end of July and be good to go? Is Luis Garcia actually going to show up in August? I think that's a big part of it. Will Jacob Melton be ready to go in 4 weeks? And can he actually show that he belongs in the big leagues? I think we don't know a lot of that stuff right now. But we talked about this before, Brandon, with Fromber, right? Like, this is probably the last time you're going to have Fromber to go along with Hunter Brown and make a run. So maybe this is the year to push your chips in, because I don't think any of us expect Fromber to be back with the club next year.
It is not A, stupid, or B, miserly if Jim Crane is saying, look, our big bad acquisition is Yordan Alvarez. Remember, he sucked the first 6 weeks of the season, and it turned out he was playing with a broken hand, frankly. And then it took him a month after that to diagnose it was actually a broken hand after he went to the injured list. But if you add Yordan, you're thinking, there's our balance. Oh, by the way, there's our best offensive player. That's the trade acquisition. Now, might you look to add a Kikuchi-type starter? One more arm for the bullpen to strengthen a strength. But a big-ticket salary acquisition, I don't see it. But if the Orioles put Ryan O'Hearn on the market, he makes total sense for the Astros. He's a pending free agent, left-handed hitter who can play some first base. If Christian Walker, you're thinking you want to siphon some at-bats away from there. And he can also give you some at-bats against right-handed pitching days. You want to sit Cam Smith or play him in left if left field doesn't resolve itself, because Altuve is going to play a little bit more second base. But Jim Crane can quite arguably say, we're in a position of strength. The onus is not on us in the American League West to make moves.
Yeah, and it is tough because you could look at, you know, you talked about Yordan being a big bat acquisition, and perhaps even Christian Walker turning around could be a big bat acquisition for you. I wouldn't count on that just given the momentum so far. But Charlie, you're not a believer in momentum because you said it only carries to the next game. I just wonder, looking at where they're at right now, do you think they prioritize either a pitcher, like a starting pitcher, to bolster the rotation? You know, because we don't know how far, I don't even know they know how close Garcia is to coming back. So do you think it is a pitcher that they would prioritize because they do prioritize pitching and defense on this team? Do you think it's a bat, or do you think Dana Brown's going to operate from a best available standpoint as far as a trade target goes?
Going by what Dana says, just we're always in the market for pitching. He says that all the time. So, you know, what if some of these guys that have come up from Sugarland start to get knocked around a little bit? That could happen as the league kind of catches up with them and scouting reports get updated. I don't expect that to happen, but it's certainly a possibility. So just based off of Dana Brown's history, I would lean toward pitching.
And they're very limited if they hope to make a move and stay below the first CBT number. On the big league roster, there really aren't contracts to move. Now, Dubon makes $5 million. Probably not worth $5 million, but he has value specific to this team, and he's more positionally versatile than if Brendan Rodgers is the guy who's kept around. So, you know, they're going to look to thread that needle. I don't think they feel any pressure to make a move. This time last year, they were 10 games out. This time right now, they're 4.5 games to the good. Hey, Seattle, cheapos, you going to do something, or are you going to sit behind the Astros? We talked last week how the Rangers schedule is actually pretty soft over the next couple of weeks. Seattle kind of in the middle. I mean, look, the Astros could slump, go back on the road and revert to their earlier season, and then it's a tough homestand after that. But the flip side of the coin is the Astros could stretch this out to 7-8 games near the All-Star break. And the last series before the All-Star break, they play the Rangers. The first series after the All-Star break, they play the Mariners. They win both those series. And the Astros, while not lapping the field, could find themselves a very healthy distance in front, because forget the Angels and, of course, the Athletics.
I'm really excited about where this team could be at the All-Star break, looking at tentative returns from Yordan and then eventually Arrigetti and maybe Garcia. I wouldn't hold my breath, but we'll see. One last reminder, if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to click like on the video. And if you listen on podcast on apps like Apple or Spotify, please give us a 5-star rating while you're here. Our next scheduled episode drops Thursday. Make sure you subscribe to this channel because we also drop emergency episodes as big news breaks. So make sure those notifications are on. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying so long. Thanks for listening. Get your pet spayed or neutered. And until next time, go Astros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.